2018 Russia World Cup is less than 2 months away, and this factory in southeast China is churning out merchandise. It takes at least 3 days of filing, polishing, and decorating to transform hunks of zinc alloy into a replica of soccer's biggest prize, the FIFA World Cup trophy. The factory's operator, Wagon Group, takes strict rules on weight, height, and how much of a trophy is made of gold very seriously.
I think both the EU and the Irish government are playing politics with this. The British government does not want a hard border. The Irish government does not want a hard border. The only person who seems to want to have a hard border is the EU, that is so sensitive about, ooh, this is the external border of the EU.
Right.
So I think people, you know, the benchmark 10-year, the 3% that people are looking at, there's a lot of focus on. I think it's a big deal, but I think it's a big deal that yields are moving higher. I actually think the front end of the yield curve has become an alternative. You know, the front end of 2 year, now at 250, is creating an alternative. It used to be, actually, I got to buy utility stocks, I've got to buy preferred stocks. Actually, I can do really well sitting in the front end, not taking a lot of risk. You know, it used to be my cash is getting zero over my front end. Now it's changing the paradigm.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is May the 7th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for the start of another business week and another edition of The Opening Bell. And we've got a great broadcast for you today, a little bit later in the program. Lindsay Walco will be here. She's the founder of the Center for Pet Safety. She's responsible for developing testing standards for all of the gear that we use for our pets, even developing crash test dummy doggies. And we'll talk with Lindsay about some of the safety testing she's done recently, especially if you plan on riding around with your dog in your car or SUV. It's also CEO Spotlight Monday. Alex Picios is here with us today from Cinespace, and we'll get into our conversation with Alex momentarily. But first, on the WGN Opening Bell market desk from Associated Bank, Asian shares mostly higher today following strong gains on Wall Street after the U.S. jobless rate hit an 18-year low, helping investors overlook unresolved trade tensions between Washington and Beijing. Markets in Asia are going to end the day generally mixed now, with the Nikkei off about 5 points. The Hang Seng is up about 67 points, which is about a quarter. The Shanghai up about 1.5% this morning, about 45 points. In Europe, markets in London and Germany and France are higher. In London by almost 1%, in Germany by about a third, and in France by just a fraction. And in the U.S., futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 45 points. NASDAQ futures are up 34. And S&P futures are up 6. Crude oil is trading at $70.39 a barrel, up about 67 cents. A couple of stories that we're following for you this morning. Berkshire Hathaway reported $1 billion first quarter loss as new accounting rules forced it to change the way it accounts for the value of its investments. Warren Buffett's conglomerate reported the loss just before its annual shareholder meeting in Omaha over the weekend. At that meeting, Buffett says he is not expecting a full-blown trade war to develop between the United States and China because both countries benefit so much from trade. Buffett made the comments at that meeting, also said that he's optimistic about growth in the United States and really globally. Analysts say a list of hardline demands that the Trump administration handed China this past week could make it even more difficult to resolve a trade conflict between the two largest economies. Front and center this morning is the founder of Cinespace in Chicago. Alex Picios is here on CEO Spotlight Monday, and we're going to talk a little bit about Cinespace and the things going on there. Alex, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to meet you, because we see the shows that are being produced here, and every time I see them, I'm like, I think I know the guy behind that. You. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit. The news that we have now is this: the development that you're doing in to really create like a backlot here in Chicago for a production company.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. We were working hard the last couple of years on actually fencing our property and actually making it a backlot. You know, and for those purposes, for what the shows now can shoot on the streets and not have to disturb outside neighbors. And more importantly, we can take facades of these buildings. So our renderings and what we're going to do is we're going to take one side of the building and build Chinatown, mm-hmm. New York on another one, London, and Main Street USA. So these shows can actually shoot on the buildings.
How big of a deal is that for a company that's thinking about coming in and doing a shoot here in Chicago to have that centralized location?
Oh yeah, it's big. You know, for them now. For example, Empire, which shoots at Cinema Space, you know, mm-hmm. people don't realize that it's shot here in Chicago, not in New York. But now instead of them having to go to New York and shoot some of those Brown Street looks and them walking down the street, they can actually shoot it right on our lot. So it's going to be savings for the productions, and it's going to help with the creativity.
People keep saying it's Hollywood in Chicago, and really, it's not that far from that, is it?
No, it is Hollywood in Chicago. You know what? Right now, outside of Universal in Los Angeles, you know, CineSpace is the largest film studio facility in the world with 31 sound stages. And what's neat is at our facility, it's not just stages. We have camera companies, lighting companies, animation companies, casting companies, post production companies. So it's really a Hollywood in the Midwest.
One of the things I love about Chicago is being able to see some of these productions, though, on the streets. I know they're in my neighborhood in Uptown a lot. I've seen them everywhere. That's not going to go away, is it?
No, not at all. No, creativity with these shows, they always love different looks, you know. But this is, by us having the backlot, it'll give them one little option, less of having to go out. They can actually just use a street right in our neighborhood.
What is the reaction from the neighborhood to all of this?
Oh, they're excited. I mean, you know, we had community meetings before this was approved by the city council, and they're excited about it. You know, that area there, there's a lot of security now, and there's excitement. Everyone likes to walk around and see the actors and, you know, communicate with them. And the neighborhood's been really positive on this.
That's the Lawndale neighborhood, right?
Correct, North Lawndale.
So how we were talking before we went on the air this morning about how this there might be a bonus coming back to some of the people from that neighborhood with apprenticeships. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so CineCares started a partnership with Dick Wolf Films, NBC, and IATSE 476, which is the local union here. And we started an apprenticeship program where 12 kids from the neighborhood, minimum age high school graduates, actually work on the show. So they work as makeup artists, set deck construction, lights and grip, camera. So they actually work. It's a paid apprenticeship. And then after that, we actually have a graduation. And then the kids that actually want to keep staying in the film industry, they actually have an opportunity to get into the union.
As we all know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and getting your foot in the door is a big deal, isn't it, for that?
Yes, it is. You know, and I'm really proud to say from our first graduating class of 12 students, five of them were entered into the union a couple weeks ago. So it's exciting, you know, because it's really hard to break into this business.
Alex, the story of CineSpace is it's almost written like a movie itself. Give our listeners who haven't heard the backstory a story.
Yeah, CineSpace really happened. It wasn't some big business deal. That it really came from an uncle that helped me. You know, I'm born and raised in Chicago, and I was in the real estate business. And in 2007, it was not a good year to be in the real estate business. So I ended up losing everything and went bankrupt, foreclosure on my house, and married with four kids. It's a tough place to be. So I went to a wedding in Toronto to see my uncle Nick, his niece was getting married. And, you know, he tells me, hey, you know, what are you going to do with your life now? You know, I said, I don't know. I'm trying to figure stuff out. And so he said, you know, we have CineSpace here in Toronto. I always like Chicago. Why don't you find a small little 100,000 square foot building and I'll help you? Well, 100,000 square feet became 1.5 million square feet. And I had an uncle that really was my angel, you know, and he taught me the business. Unfortunately, we lost him 4 years ago. But when he passed, we had five sound stages. And like I said, now we have 31. And I'm just, he gave me marching orders at the end of his life, and I'm following through with them. So really, it's a really great story that it really wasn't some big strategic business move. It was a family member coming to help a nephew in dire straits.
How did he know that this would be a money-making proposition like this?
Well, he did talk to the studios. He had a very good relationship with LA, and they said, listen, we love Chicago, but in, you know, after the 80s, if you remember, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the John Hughes movies, everything dried up. And it really was, he said, greediness. You know, a lot of the studios said, you know what, everyone got a little greedy there, the fees, the unions, and that's why we left. So Nick said, hey, what if I can put this together there, come and support me? So he did. And you know, you see what's happened here. It's unbelievable.
You like to boast the number of jobs that have been created since you've opened up, and it really is something to boast about.
Yeah, since we opened up in 2011, the last numbers, we've created over 16,000 film-related jobs and over $4 billion in revenue for the state and the city. So it's really been, and they're in North Lawndale.
$4 billion, that's with a B.
Yeah. This
how do you, just in case people aren't hearing it right, how do you quantify that? How do you know that that's been created?
Well, what they do is they take the actual spend. So every production that shoots in the state of Illinois, it's all accounted for. So they actually go to the state of Illinois and show where every dollar was spent. And then they have a multiplier effect where these people, you know, that come here stay at hotels, they go to dinners, they go shopping, and that's how you get the number.
And some of it is probably not quantifiable, isn't it? I was telling you before we went in the air, too, that sometimes I feel like when I'm watching television, everything's Chicago. It used to be all the TV shows were New York. The publicity that the city gets from that, I would imagine you can't really quantify that.
No, you can't. I mean, it's as simple as the great tourism numbers we heard recently, you know, from City Hall. You know, there's no doubt that CineSpace and the film industry definitely plays a toll in that because, like you said, you're watching TV and you see Chicago. Well, there's people in the Midwest and the East Coast and the West Coast that are doing the same thing, and all of a sudden, you know, the guy looks at his wife and says, you know, let's go to Chicago. You know, and that's the stuff that you can't quantify, but it's real.
And there's fierce competition in this area, too. I know for a long time, Illinois has been competing with Georgia. Georgia is oftentimes said to have the best benefits for companies that want to go there and film. But how would you compare the two states, and what do you think needs to change to help us beat Atlanta or Georgia?
Yeah, so I think we need to do I don't think we need to do anything. I mean, Georgia is kind of they're the flavor of the month right now because their incentive actually covers a full spend. So, for example, if Fox shoots a feature film in Georgia, Georgia gives 30% of the dollars spent, not specifically dollars spent in the state of Georgia. So that doesn't help with creating more jobs for people in Georgia or making these studios spend the money for Georgia companies. Here in Illinois, which is great, for that same example, the $100 million, we give a 30% tax rebate back for every dollar spent in Illinois, for every job given to an Illinois person. So I'm very happy with the incentive. It's, you know, it's almost like, you know, if LA wants to get a rebate, they should spend the money in our state.
Are these productions going out of the country still? I know Vancouver and Canada used to host a lot of these shows. Are these productions staying in the United States now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal still gets business. I mean, you know, the difference is Canada has their own broadcasting system. So CineSpace in Toronto, which my family in Toronto owns, you know, half of their business, 50% of it is LA shows, LA productions, but 50% is Canadian, Ontario-based productions. So there's no doubt that Canada still get some business, but the majority of it stays in the States.
You mentioned all of the different things, all of the different business-related things that are with you at your site. It's sort of like an incubator, isn't it, for new production?
Yes, it is. And we actually started an incubator called Stage 18 because, you know, what I noticed was, you know, you have local producers, directors, finance companies that kind of didn't have a place to come together. So I built out an area at CineSpace. We called it Stage 18. And it's kind of like a club. You join the club and you actually can get creative with producers, directors. There's a finance company in there that can help you finance your productions. And I think our last numbers were we financed about $2 million for local stuff, local productions here.
Film, television projects. I know we've been talking a lot about television, movies that are doing filming here. Would we recognize any that are going on now?
Yeah. So the one that's filming right now actually is a Netflix show called Beats, which is produced by a local Chicago guy, Bob Title, who did Men of Honor and the Barbershop movies. And then television wise, you know, we have a new show coming in called Lovecraft with HBO. That's 10 episodes, which is produced by J.J. Abrams and Peele, who just won an Oscar. So we're excited about that. And the Dick Wolf shows, you know, they're all coming back. And The Chi, produced by Common, is starting next month. So, I mean, it's a plethora of business over there.
What is the dynamic? I would love to be a fly on a wall with conversations with you and Hollywood producers. You're very Chicago. I can imagine those conversations being very, very Hollywood, very Chicago, going back and forth both ways. It must be interesting.
Yeah, it is. You know what they like with us, with the Chicago way, and again, I'm born and raised here, is, you know, we make a promise and we deliver it. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I tell them I'm going to build two stages for you and it'll be ready in 6 weeks, I build it two stages already in 6 weeks. You know, and that's how you keep the business going too. You know, with those people, there's a lot on the line. There's a lot of money invested. You just got to be honest and come through for them, and they'll keep bringing you business.
What when you look into a crystal ball, what do you want for the next few years? Next half decade, next decade, what would you predict for the next decade?
Well, I think, you know, we're heading into definitely the second time that television is going to blow up again. You know, with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Apple, I mean, content is at a pace here that is nonstop, you know. And I think what I see is just more stages. You know, I'm already looking at more property around CineSpace to develop more stages. And, you know, growing the back lot into kind of a venue over there so we can do some neat stuff in North Lawndale.
Whenever we see these productions on the streets, people stop. I look around and see people stop. They're enthralled by the production that happens. Do these productions encourage people to be sort of the looky-loos and watch in on that? And will you offer tours at this back lot that you're creating?
Yeah, that's exactly my next step. So after I fence in the property, and then after that, we're going to build the facades on the buildings I talked about. The next step is tours.
Yeah.
You know, because Lagunitas Brewery, who's actually my tenant on my property, is connected to CineSpace, and they gave 400,000 tours last year at Lagunitas. So I'm going to tap into that and actually give tours there in North Lawndale. And I think, they love it. You know, the studios love when they go on a street and people are looking. And they, I know for a fact, you know, they'll go to a local pizza guy and order the lunch that day there, or, you know, the coffee at Starbucks. They'll order gigantic orders for the people shooting that day. So it's great when they go into a neighborhood because they spend the money in the neighborhood.
Give us a sense of what the challenges have been doing this. I know you've had lots of good news over the last few years, but I'm sure there's been some challenges. What have they been?
Challenges, you know, I haven't had too many, which is great. But the big one is, you know, trying to create more jobs there for the residents of North Lawndale. You know, that's really what my goal is. You know, here you are in the neighborhood there. All these great things are happening. So my outreach is something I keep on working on, and I'm nowhere near where I want to be, but I'm getting there.
You have this past week, I believe, named Man of the Year.
Yes.
That's quite an honor. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Anixter Center gave me a great award and gave me the Man of the Year. And it was kind of dear to me because for a couple reasons. My father was a 30 years special education teacher. Mm-hmm. And spent time in Anixter. And I was a special education leader in high school, and I also tutored autistic kids during college. So giving back and helping special needs children and adults, young adults and adults, is very, very important to me. And I try to do a lot of that, again, because my father, I saw the passion my father had in doing it every day. You know, it's something when you see your father go pretty much give his life to helping other people. You know, it wasn't about money or fame, or he strictly just helped special need children. So it was a great award. I was very honored, and, you know, it really is touching.
If young people are listening and they want to get into your business, what would you tell them? What would your advice to them be?
The advice for me is definitely, the best way to get in is at the bottom. I mean, there's no secret sauce, and there isn't somebody's father who knows someone's cousin. It just doesn't work that way. I've seen it already since we'd opened 2011. You come in as a PA, you know, you make that $12, $15 an hour, you go grab that coffee, you go get the cleaners, you go run and do whatever they tell you to do, and you slowly start seeing what department you like. You like set deck, you like makeup, you like directing. And you slowly start working your way and getting into those offices and build your way up. I mean, there is no shortcut, that's for sure, and I tell that to graduates all the time when I talk to them.
Has there been a wow moment during your career or during your life that has helped you come to this point where you're at now?
Well, it really, you know, it's, you know, the big thing that happened in my life is, you know, when I lost everything, you know, that really was a reset in your life, you know, and it really focuses you on what's important. And what's important now, and I've been very blessed because of the help I got from my uncle to do the right thing, which is help and give back, you know. And that's really, half of my day is spent on that. You know, how do we help people and how do we let people get into this business to get jobs and be successful?
Is this business recession-proof? Everybody keeps thinking, well, we're going to fall back into a recession soon.
Yeah.
What's the movie business, film business like? Is it recession-proof?
Yeah. I mean, historically, if you look since the beginning of making movies, which was here in Chicago, Charlie Chaplin, SNA Studios, you know, economy's bad, people are depressed, They watch movies. You know, they watch more TV. People are happy. They get outside. They watch movies, as you saw this weekend with a record-breaking movie this weekend. What was it called?
The Avengers.
The Avengers, exactly. I mean, so, yeah, it's really recession-proof, which is great.
Do you have a routine as the boss that gets you through your day?
Yeah, I mean, I'll always walk around the property a couple times a day for sure, you know, see what's going on, talk to people about getting new business mm-hmm. in. And then the other half really is really spent with Cinecares and reaching out and seeing how we can plug in some gaps in the neighborhood.
What do you watch when you're not working?
I watch all the shows here. I mean, I do watch every show that's shot by us. But I'm addicted right now to Billions. That's one of my favorite shows now. That's that's a really neat show.
We see so many exteriors and so many beauty shots of Chicago. Do you have a favorite? What's your favorite shot when you see it on TV?
It's funny you said that. When I walked in here today, this is the first thing I said. I said, how many times do they shoot in this building? Because this building is gorgeous, you know. But Chicago, the great thing about its look, and that's why Hollywood loves it. You know, you go to Pilsen, you got a different look. You go to Michigan Avenue, you got a different look. You can go by the lake. You know, that's what makes Chicago so special. Chinatown. We have so many different looks, and that's why Hollywood loves coming here, and they love the Four Seasons. They love the fall, the winter, the spring, the summer. It gives them different looks. It's all about creativity in Hollywood. So when you let them be creative, which we have here in Chicago, I mean, every look is special and different.
Alex, congratulations on your success, and it's nice meeting you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Alex Picios is the president and founder of CineSpace Chicago, and we'll have more of our conversation with Alex after the bell, and we'll post the expanded conversation coming up a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com, and make sure you check out their website at ChicagoFilmStudios.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. A new Chicago startup called Unicreamer is making a high-protein and vegan coffee cream powder. There are 5 grams of protein per serving, and it comes in 3 flavors, including hazelnut, mocha, and a combo option. A 6-pack bag retails for $13.85 and can be purchased on the startup's website. A group of public radio companies that includes WBEZ Chicago has acquired Australian podcast app Pocket Casts. The group, which includes NPR, WNYC, and This American Life, plan to run Pocket Casts as a joint venture in order to reach more podcast listeners. Chicago-based in-flight Wi-Fi maker GoGo reported its Q1 earnings today, beating Wall Street's estimates on both EPS and revenue. The company posted revenues of $231 million, which was up 40% year per year. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. We're glad you're here with us for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Before you take the next car ride with your dog, listen up. Our next guest founded the Center for Pet Safety and has been testing products designed to keep pets safe in vehicles. Just recently, Subaru of America and the Center for Pet Safety unveiled some of the safest and most dangerous spots for pets in an SUV specifically. We're going to get into all that now with Lindsay Walco, the founder of the Center for Pet Safety. Lindsay, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Nice to talk to you again. You have really sort of dedicated your life to keeping our pets safe, haven't you?
You know, it found me, you know, when Maggie got hurt years ago. It's just taken over from there. So
I wanted to start there because I don't know if people remember when we had you on before and you talked about it, but tell us what got you started, that incident with your dog.
So Maggie was wearing a safety harness when I had to slam on the brakes, and you know, I thought I did everything right as a pet owner and, you know, secured her in a car. And unfortunately, when I slammed on the brakes to avoid a crash, all I heard was screaming. So Maggie was severely injured from that harness. And from, you know, we're looking now at the aftermarket products that are available to pet owners. We've discovered that the pet products industry is highly unregulated. So we're working to develop those standards so pet owners can have more confidence in products as they, you know, purchase those for their pets.
And if you go to Center for Pet Safety's website, there are actually videos of some of the tests that you've done. You've even created some test dummies, dogs, test dummy dogs.
Yeah, we've got our crash test dogs, and we're actually working now with a volunteer group of engineers in the Michigan area, and they're helping us refine and come up with our third model, and hopefully, you know, even better, you know, new and improved test dogs. So.
Well, one of the popular vehicles now, getting even more popular, are SUVs, and you've teamed up, I know, with Subaru of America to talk about the dangers in those vehicles. What have you found?
Well, so, you know, it all depends on the configuration. So we know, like, millennials and the growing families are really embracing the three-row SUV. And it really depends on the configuration that you purchase. You have now the option to get either two captain's chairs in that second row or a bench seat. And if you choose the captain's chairs, you know, that's a little more limiting, but at the end of the day, it gives you a lot of other options from a seating perspective that you haven't had in the past. We recommend for pets 20 pounds and under that you can place them safely on the captain's chair, so secure them. And then if you have larger pets, they should go in that third row. If you get the bench option, they should move forward. You can move them up. So
yeah, this all takes into consideration that you're using one of those harnesses that you've tested. When you tested those, what, you know, you said you talked about the lack of regulation, but if I recall, it was pretty stunning that pretty much most of them failed, didn't they?
Most of them fail. Yes, absolutely. To this day, most of them continue to fail. In order to address this, since we can't mandate it, it's not something that's going to have federal oversight. We've launched the Center for Pet Safety Certified Program. And so pet owners can come to our website. We've got crates and carriers and harnesses that have passed our testing. Out of the work we did with Subaru years ago, we actually established the first safety standards for these products to be used in vehicles. And we have manufacturers that voluntarily comply. We also have, you know, done a lot of testing for brands, and most of them, unfortunately, do continue to fail.
And Subaru is one of those brands that is actually trying to design their vehicles with pets in mind.
I think, you know, our goal with Subaru is, you know, we're looking at the three-row SUVs right now, but I think that the goal in general is to ensure that the aftermarket products, so we can make the aftermarket products work, so we can make sure that every vehicle out there is safe. Pet owners have options that they haven't had in the past. I know Subaru has dedicated their mission to safety. Over 2/3 of Subaru drivers have pets, so that's one of the reasons they're focused, you know, on that market.
After I met you and have interviewed you a couple of times, I am now hesitant to ever travel with my dog in a harness or not in the vehicle. Is that sort of an irrational fear on my part, or am I doing the right thing?
Yeah, I think it's not an irrational fear, but, you know, at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons we've launched the CPS certified program, is so that pet owners can have confidence in products that they, you know, that they choose. You know, we allow our seal on those products so pet owners can identify them. And it's really amazing to me that we're not seeing as much traction in this space from the pet products industry. That's one of the reasons we want, you know, pet owners to be very discerning when you select a product.
It's amazing how many of these products oftentimes put their own seal on their packaging saying, oh, this has been tested. But sometimes that's not the case, and that's, you mentioned the regulation part of this. Is there any movement being made on regulating these companies a little bit better?
Not at the moment. There are some challenges on Capitol Hill. It's really not a place where we're, you know, targeting at the moment. Maybe down the road, we will continue those discussions with them. But again, we want the industry to understand, you know, this is for their benefit. But it's really the pet owners need to push the manufacturers to voluntarily comply with safety standards. And we need pet owners to, you know, engage a little bit more and really push the brands to certify.
Because, I mean, it's something that pet owners have done in some instances with food. When they saw things happening with food, they've obviously used their dollars to not buy stuff that's come from bad places. But how specifically can we do that? Do we write letters? Do we, team up with organizations like yours and you do the lobbying? How can we get more involved in this?
Well, we definitely want pet owners to get more involved with Center for Pet Safety. It's one of those things, you know, we work on their behalf. We're a nonprofit organization. You know, we are working to drive change in a highly unregulated industry. So really, pet owners can vote with their wallets. It's the same type of a process. If it's not Center for Pet Safety certified, don't buy the product. That's really, you know, the focus in the travel space. Now, we're also working on other projects in the background. So in the future, it will be beyond, we're working outside of travel in those. So we're looking into collars and leashes and walking harnesses and, you know, foods and all sorts of stuff in the background. So, you know, we do work on behalf of pet owners. We want them engaged.
If we were going out today to buy something to take care of our dog while we were driving, what is the recommendation from Center for Pet Safety? Is it a crate? Is it a harness?
Well, we don't discriminate between the types yet. That's where the new test dogs will, they'll help us measure more. So then, you know, we can give more than just the best possible chance of survival to the pet. Hopefully in the future, we will be able to say, you know, this is a life-saving product. We're just not there yet. You know, we're a young organization, and we definitely need more partnerships to help us fund some of that research. It's for right now, if it's Center for Pet Safety certified harness or carrier, the crate would go in the cargo area. So any of the products that we have right now are all, you know, going to protect the people in the vehicle and give the pets the best possible chance of survival.
Now that you've been doing this for a while, are you still surprised every time you do these tests about the outcomes?
9 times out of 10, yes. You know, some of them we can predict now. We can look, we've learned so much that we can look at a product and say, okay, this one has a better chance of holding up in testing. But we can look at some now and go, this is not going to hold up at all. And we provide a lot of knowledge sharing and guidance to those brands so that they can actually comply and, you know, save them research and development money so that they can do that kind of work. But again, we need more brands to certify. We need more brands to participate in the program.
There's so much money in pet products. It's billions of dollars. Convincing them to do the right thing, is it going to be an uphill battle going forward, or do you think owners will succeed at some point?
I'm hopeful that we're having an impact. We're seeing more and more brands, you know, around the globe actually reach out to Center for Pet Safety for guidance and how they're going to, you know, how do they go through testing and ask a lot of questions. So that's a good sign. But again, you know, it is a $70 billion highly unregulated industry. And, you know, what we've uncovered in the travel space is just the tip of an iceberg. And that's the biggest problem we're up against right now, is that their marketing dollars are just gargantuan in comparison to our research dollars. And that's really where we need pet owners to help us and partners and, you know, sponsors, that type of thing, so that we can continue this research in the consumer interest.
The website is centerforpetsafety.org. And I'm guessing the call to action from you would be go there and donate.
Go there and donate, absolutely. I mean, we're working on behalf of pet owners. And, you know, the stories that we get in from pet owners who have encountered a bad product are devastating to them. And we want to get in front of these challenges that are out there right now. So,
Lindsay, good talking with you. And, again, thank you for your work keeping all of our pets safe.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Lindsay Walco, the founder of the Center for Pet Safety. Again, Center for Pet Safety.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 62 points, NASDAQ futures up about 40, and S&P futures up about 8 points this morning as we head toward the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Let's get the update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We begin a 5-day week of rolled contracts, because we saw it happen last Friday as cattle traders rolled their June positions into back months before similar moves that will last for 5 days this week. That put August cattle contract at $105.07, down 45 cents for the day. Cash cattle last week, $123 to $128 per hundredweight. So 5 days of rolling into future contracts, and we'll be watching that action. The other action we'll be watching today is the planting progress report due out this afternoon from USDA. Haven't seen the guesses yet, but I would guess we're going to look at some pretty good numbers in planting progress the past week. We've been hearing about planting in Illinois that across the southern half of the state pretty well completed, and I think Iowa and other corn states in the Midwest are going to show pretty good planting progress that'll be out this afternoon. The markets in the grain trade down 15 and three-quarters cents in May soybeans on Friday. May wheat was down 11 cents, and May corn down a penny a bushel. Well, keep an eye on the roll, keep an eye on planting progress, and have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion, you as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, May 7th. The Federal Reserve releases March consumer credit data this afternoon. Also today, a couple of Fed speakers out there, Robert Kaplan, Chicago's Charles Evans, also giving a speech later. Earnings today, AMC Entertainment, Gannett Corporation, and Tyson Foods. Tomorrow, the Labor Department issues its job openings and labor turnover survey for March. Earnings from Disney, Sturm Ruger, and then on Wednesday, 21st Century Fox. We'll also get the PPI, on Thursday the CPI, and on Friday the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Survey. So a lot of things on the calendar this week and today that could move the markets.